Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Avington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. After today, we only have two more shows left. And I'm going to tell you, I'm having almost like nightmares thinking about 2 weeks from now on that last show and saying goodbye. When I started, I had no idea how long the War Report would go on. Never once. I didn't know it would be a week. Well, I knew it would be a month because I paid for a month. But I just had no idea. And as we have gone through the years, it's incredible that we've been doing this for coming up on 4 years. Almost several hundred shows, I don't know how many minutes, but it's incredible to me that I had no idea when the end would come, and now that we are approaching it, it's been really a difficult decision to make, and it's becoming even more difficult as we approach the end of the show. Oh, man, I never intended to start off with that speech. This is what I intended to start off with. It was kind of like an apology. Last week, I stated that in talking about black women and their contribution to America, to the cause of black liberation, freedom, et cetera, that I would exclude talking about women from the arts, the entertainment segment, and only more or less talk about those women who came out of academia to some extent, civil rights movement, suffrage movement, and that's where I was going. Well, after that show last week, and after Thursday when we put out our promotion, which I'm going to talk about in a few minutes, just let me just interrupt. If you get our promotion, and if you didn't look at it, if you still have it, take a look at it. It is a gorgeous display of this young lady, girl, looks like she's maybe 7, 8, 6, and she channels Angela Davis, Rosa Parks, Madam C.J. Walker, Toni Morrison, Sojourner Truth, Dr. Mae Jensen, the first, I guess, black female astronaut. You got to see it. Is it a darling? Yes, it is. Is this perfect for our show? Yes, it is. But anyway, I made a mistake. I screwed up. I said that I wouldn't go to that segment. And that was a bias on my part. And I realized that early on, but even just a few minutes ago, I sort of like tweaked it some. It's a bias. It was a bias then because when I look at people in the entertainment industry today, and I include sports as part of the entertainment industry, I don't see, with the exception of Colin Kaepernick, I don't see individuals like people in the past, black entertainers, black sports figures, who were not only proficient as an athlete or entertainer, but they were also very much cut from the mold of earlier black people who had a platform. They used their platform to talk about racism in this country and the need for change and the uplifting of the black, the brown, and other minorities, the poor in our society. Today, and again, this is my views, my perspective, I don't see that nowhere near the level on individually or collectively among today's entertainers, be it in music, be it in television, be it in movies, in sports. They have seemed to be on a plane of get mine, keep it, and move on. Not like the black intellectuals or black, there wasn't that many black entertainers either back then. I'm talking about the 16, 17, 1800s and the 1900s. And I was being prejudicial and saying that I was going to exclude that group because of my own prejudice. That's what it was. And I recognize that, and I'm going to correct today. So, let me get to it. I'm going to talk today, and again, something else I said last week. For those of you who don't know black history because you didn't get it in school, K through 12, you didn't get it in college, you didn't get it if you're a teacher and your teacher prep program, you didn't get it from your community, your home, or what have you. What we've been talking about last week, and we're going to talk about today, and what we've talked about over the past 3 years as relates to our Black History presentation, you can learn a lot. And if you follow up in terms of doing your own research, you'll learn even more. And if you're a teacher, and I'm laying this onus on a teacher, and your school allows you to do Black History Month programs or whatever you can do in your classroom. What we've been talking about on this show for the last 3 years should be very helpful to you. As I said last week, information is out there. Take some time, do some research. You will come up with plenty of information that you can use during Black History Month. Okay, that having been said, well, for today, I decided that since I'm going to try and correct my faux pas from last week, that I'm going to talk about some women that most definitely deserve to be mentioned in this conversation that I didn't get to, some from the entertainment industry as well as others from education and politics, civil rights movement, women's movement, and et cetera. One that I want to start off with is that Bessie Coleman Now, this is a name that I don't expect the vast majority of black people to know. Bessie Coleman, American, who as a young girl was very fascinated by aviation. We're talking here the early 1900s. And she wanted to learn how to fly. Go figure. She wanted to learn how to fly. And as she was growing up under Jim Crow, separate but unequal, you know, separate but equal, but the real thing is separate and unequal, she wanted to learn to fly. And she worked, put money together, and she tried to get into flight schools in America, and she couldn't because, one, she was a woman, two, she was a black woman. Or it could be the reverse, she was a black woman, she was black and she was a woman. Well, she decided to leave the U.S. and go to Europe where she could get into flight school. She studied French and then later German, and she went to France. She got into flight school. She got certified to be an aviator. She was the first African-American. She was also part Native American person to get an aviator's license. Not a black male before her, not a Native American male before her, of course not a black woman. She was the first. She would go on to achieve recognition worldwide as a top-notch aviator. She came back to the United States from Europe. She joined what were like, you know, acrobatic flying circuses. You go out on the parade field and you watch the planes do their maneuvers in the air and what have you. She was allowed to do that as a black woman in the early 1900s. She had a dream, and that dream was to start a flight school for African-American, but particularly other African-American women. That tradition of earlier generations of black people who got an education, they got a particular skill, they got something, they wanted to use that to help uplift what back then was called uplifting the race. She did set an example for other blacks to want to emulate, and you know the rest is history. Black men in World War II went to Tuskegee, Alabama, flight school there from the, I guess, university, Tuskegee University. They flew in World War II, set records of downing enemy planes, protecting American planes that could only be tied but never broken. She set all of that in motion for us. And we don't know about her here in the U.S. I learned about her in, I think it was 2000, 2001, by a French movie maker, filmmaker, who wanted to do her life story. I saw the screenplay, made some suggestions, and et cetera, and that's how I came to know about her. And there's also another connection. Me, as a young 16-year-old who signed up to go into the Air Force at 16, I wanted to be a pilot. I wanted to fly planes. I wanted to do the things that I saw in the movies and et cetera. Not knowing that this woman was the person who basically made it even possible for someone like me to think about it. Later in life, I did go to flight school and start working on getting my pilot's license. And I sort of like go back now and thank her for her pioneering efforts. That was her. And again, you can look her up. She is there. So most of the women we've talked about, of course, were the 1600, 1700, 1800. Here's something that I discovered. Many of the women that we've talked about, they died early. And Bessie Coleman was in her 30s. She first was an accident, testing out a plane that she had just bought, and there was mechanically something wrong with it, and she ended up dying. But the other black women, they died early. I took note of that just in the last about 24 hours that we're talking about living in the 40s and the 50s. I mean, their age 40s and the 50s. And it was just, to me, something that I need to look more into. But that was one thing that I thought I'd share as well. Then, coming back to our list, there is a woman, Dorothy Hike, H-E-I-G-H-T. She was an educator. You know, that's my preference here. I felt like, you know, lean toward trying to identify some early educator for us. But she's credited with her attempts to level the playing field for blacks via or through education. She was an advocate, an activist, and an educator. Born in 1912, died April 20th, 2010. Her work in trying to, again, uplift the race via trying to get equality or equal, back then, just consider it an equal education for blacks and for women. And this is something I mentioned last week. You find many of these women, they work multiple avenues, not just race, but they were involved in women's movement, trying to bring about equal rights for all women. They were, you know, part of the abolition in the 1600s, 1700s. Voting rights in the late 40s and the 50s, you name it, they were involved in multiple causes. That's something we don't see a lot today either. But I thought that was very, very important. So she became a valuable role model for hundreds of young black women in terms of the belief and pushing that we should get an education. I say we because, you know, talking about black people here, we should get an education. And it was through education that we would have our best shot of being able to level the playing field. Now, this was also something, I think I may have mentioned it last week, but after the Civil War and the Reconstruction, and even before that, almost universally, black people saw the importance of education and that it was through education that we would be able to have our best shot of reaching or coming close to some kind of level of equality. And I remember saying in the first year of the show, one of the reasons I came on the air with the War Report was I was so pissed off by everyone saying that, white people saying that black folks didn't care about education. Black parents didn't care about education. Black kids didn't care about education. That pissed me off because my parents, as you've heard me say, that was their number one goal for me, you know, besides surviving, was to get an education. Believed wholeheartedly in the importance of me getting an education, black people getting education. This woman was one of the people who, as early as the early 1900s, was very instrumental in pushing for black people getting an education, an equal education. And at the time, you know, segregation was a really dangerous job for anyone to try and publicly push for the type of changes that she was calling for, especially in the Deep South. You already know this, but she was a major advocate for increasing what we fight for today, funding for public education in black communities. Let me say that again. As early as the early 1900s, this was a woman who was an educator, but she was also an activist, an advocate, and she was pushing for increased funding for public education in black communities. And when I was doing the research, I'm saying, sounds like she should be our neighbor today because we're fighting the same battle that she and others were fighting almost 100 years ago, in some cases more than 100 years ago. That was her. Then we have here another woman that I think we will go to. I mentioned Ella Baker last week, and I want to come back again because even though she's a little bit more in our contemporary time, born in 1903, she died in 1986. This woman is perhaps most revered for mobilizing youth, and particularly black youth. Her story, and again, I'm only giving you capsule versions because I've got so many I want to go through, but her story was that, and she too was a very strong proponent of education and civil rights, that dual connection that I've been mentioning. But here she goes. She was very instrumental in trying to work to get us, I identify with this, us education, but also to get political and economic rights for the black community. She was, for her day, a powerhouse in that she would become a person who would you believe it? She worked with President Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the New Deal. She's credited with being a person who helped him, the then president, become aware and fully understand how the black experience was as it relates to economic and education. Let me say it again. This is a woman who would have the President of the United States' ear, one of his advisors, and she was pushing the black experience as it related to economic equality and education. For her time, that was really big stuff. She would go on to advise others in political office about, again, the importance of jobs and education were the most important thing that the black Americans needed after the Civil War. He wasn't born right after the Civil War, but for that period in the early 1900s all the way up to after World War II, she was very, very influential. She also was very much involved with the NAACP at the time, and she would become involved with SNCC. I'm using the acronym here for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And this is where she, I guess her legacy would be that she is credited with mobilizing the youth, and particularly black youth. And it's, I'm not laughing, but her experience, I'm very familiar with. She worked with Dr. King. She worked with other, the NAACP. She worked with other organizations who were fighting for civil rights. She worked as an adult with other adults. They couldn't get on and stay on the same page all the time, and particularly when SNCC got involved and other organizations driven by black youth, there was conflict. There was attempts to co-opt one side or the other. She left the adult arena and went with the youth. In her late 40s, her 50s, and working with teenagers, early 20s, youth. And it was through her involvement with the youth of the period that she contributed quite a bit to some of the youthful organizations, civil rights movement, as an organizer, as a consultant, more or less, and bringing the youth into the movement for social change, better known as the civil rights movement of the time, unlike probably any other adult during the period. Now, that's a big statement. We all think about Martin Luther King. She worked with King. She worked with Du Bois. She worked with all of them. But she would side with the youth because she believed that it was the youth, their energy, and their unwillingness to be accommodationists, go slow, accept little token steps forward as being victories. The youth of the period, if you know anything about the civil rights movement, far more aggressive, far more demanding, and more willing to go physical in terms of the sit-ins, the marches, the demonstrations, and everything else that the adults were not that inclined to do She went with him, and she brought her years of experience and knowledge, political knowledge and experience, to them and helped them be able to do things that can move the needle farther, faster than probably any single or collective adult of the period. Again, look her up. She's very, very prominent in our history. I mentioned Fannie Lou Hamer last week, and I sort of like rushed through that, but let me take a minute and say about her again. This is a woman in the South who, daughter of sharecroppers, if you know about sharecropping, I've talked about it in the past. After the Civil War, there was that period of about 10 to 12 to 14 years that the 14th Amendment, 13th, 14th Amendment came into being, that opened the door for blacks to be able to, males to be able to vote, and notions of freedom and equality, et cetera, that lasted about, depending on who you talk to, 10 to 12, 14 years, and it collapsed. And in this place came separate but equal, better known as Jim Crow. And under that system of sharecropping came about. They replaced chattel slavery with sharecropping. She was born during that period. Her mother and father were sharecroppers. Very, very miserable existence. And as a child, she became interested in and then committed to trying to bring about social change for those blacks who were living in the segregated South, and particularly Mississippi. She wasn't an educated person in that college or a teacher. She was a plain folk who got involved with the efforts to get black people the right to vote in the South. That effort on her part would almost cost her life. She was jailed and severely, severely beaten while in jail. She would almost lose an eye, a kidney, and a few other organs from the beating. But she persisted in pushing for the right to vote in Mississippi. She's famous for an interview where she said, "I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired." She was expressing her life experience as a black person, a black woman, living under segregation, harsh conditions in the South, and she's had enough of it. And she became an icon in the civil rights movement. She became an icon after the Supreme Court decision of 1954. And most importantly, she challenged the Democratic Party under Lyndon Baines Johnson to seat a black delegation as representing Democratic Party from Mississippi versus the all-white delegation who had forever, this is when the South was Democratic as opposed to Republican, and it made world news, national news, and it caused quite a bit of consternation. That was Fannie Lou Hamer. She would pay a price for this, of course, but we owe to her a tremendous debt and her efforts to secure civil rights for blacks in the South as well as the North. Okay, I'm only doing thumbnail sketches, right, folks? So you understand that, with the caveat that you can go and look up the people that I'm telling you about. The entertainment industry. Ruby Dee, actress, 1924 to June 2014. She was 91 years old when she died. I don't know, again, if you know of her, but she was a prominent female black actress. And unlike many black people in the entertainment industry during her time, she was a very vocal, visible activist, advocate that used her entertainment platform to speak out against inequality, speak out against racial motivated violence, to speak out against separate but unequal. And she never backed down during her lifetime, during her career. You look her up. A little aside, as a young man, I think I saw her in a movie. I don't can't remember how old I was, but I must have been a teenager, young teenager. I thought this was the most beautiful woman on the planet. I'll just leave it at that. She was my heartthrob for a long time. But anyway, Ruby Dee. You know, most people don't know her for her activism and her efforts to bring about equality. Most deserving of our attention and our respect. In the field of education, here is a name that I knew something about, but not a whole lot about. And I'm kind of like embarrassed for it. But Mary Frances Berry. I want to say, you know, how many of you have heard that name? But I won't go there. I just did. But anyway, here, let me tell you something about her. One, educator. Educator personified, university professor. This, if you're a teacher and you want to present a role model for young black girls, girls of color, about what women have done, what women can do, this is a woman that you want to put on your board and highlight. This, let me just give you some of who, what this woman has accomplished. And I won't do it in any type of chronological order. But as I said, she was a, became a university professor. She earned a PhD and a law degree. Remember, she was born in 1938. She's still alive. Her accomplishment includes becoming the provost of the College of Behavioral and Social Sciences at the University of Maryland, the flagship campus at College Park. Provost, that's like, you know, the president. She also was the past president of the Organization of American Historians. She's a professor of American social thought and history. She has been the chancellor of the University of Colorado at Boulder, again, flagship campus. She was assistant secretary for education in the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare before education became its own department. And this was under Carter. The woman's accomplishment just blows my mind. She's a former chairperson of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. And she was a professor at Howard University. And far as I can determine, she is still alive. I don't know where she is currently. I'm going to work on that. But listen to the things that I just mentioned. You're talking about an education role model here? I mean, wow, to me, again, my bias, but to me, wow, what an accomplished woman. What a role model that if you want to highlight a woman or black women, I can't, again, I'm biased. I'm a professor, okay? And I believe in education and getting as much education as you possibly can. She would be my role model for incredible. In a similar vein, there is another black professor who went on to accomplish quite a bit. But let me balance this out and stick right now with going back to the accomplishments of black educators. Janetta Cole, she too, a professor, an anthropologist. And I say that because I don't know of many black anthropologists. That caught me by surprise when I was doing my research on her. She was an educator. She was president of Spelman College. And if you don't know about the Black Historical College University, Spelman has been considered one of the flagships of the 20-some-odd black college and university that were established after the Civil War and maybe one or two before. She was the president of Spelman, the first woman to become president of Spelman. She was the director of the Smithsonian Institute, their Museum of African Art. She was a co-founder of one of the nation's first black studies departments. I kind of want to take a little exception to that because, anyway, she did that in terms of her accomplishment. So that Spelman thing, very, very big. She was also president of Bennett College. Very impressive. Her contribution was that she worked very hard to further academic opportunities for African American, particularly women. Again, if you're teaching on black subjects on black history, but here is a woman who went to the pinnacle as it relates to getting her doctorate, a noted teacher, researcher, and she was the first to do many things, all as a result of her education and her commitment to furthering academic opportunities for other women and minorities. She too far as I can determine, is still alive. She was born in 1936. Other entertainers that have stepped across from just being entertainers making money and who involved in the civil rights movement of their period, women's movement, and you probably know her, Aretha Franklin, because she was very, very popular and worldwide famous during the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and she's still performing. But what many people don't know was that, like other people who secured a platform during the early 1900s, the mid-1900s, the 1800s, she used her platform to advocate, be an activist for human rights, civil rights, for not only African-American, but for everyone. Miriam Wright Edelman. Now, many of you probably know who she is. Born 1939, still very much alive and active. She was an advocate for children, advisors to presidents, and she too started her work back in the summer of 1965, the Freedom Summer. I won't say she started because maybe she was active before then, but as a young woman, Freedom Summer, Mississippi, is when she really sort of like burst on the scene, involved with that movement, and would become, as her legend is around her advocacy for children, she goes to law school, she gets involved in politics, and she becomes one of the most recognized names and individuals as relates to education. When we talked about community schools a few months ago, she has established, because she worked back in the summer of 65, community schools. Freedom schools. And then she started, you know, the foundation that is dedicated to making children's lives better. And for some reason, I'm blanking on the name of her foundation. I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry. It's the Children's Defense Fund. It just came back. That's what she's noted for today, and it's through the Children's Defense Fund that she's established, I want to say more than two dozen community schools or freedom schools across the country, freedom schools. Again, she's active, she's alive, you can find much, much material on her. Now, I'm supposed to talk about also more about the positive youth development school. And I'm running out of time, as always happens to me. I try to do too much, especially now with only having two shows left. I'm going to have to apologize that I did not allow myself time to go into more detailed discussion about that. I want to kind of like make a promise that I'll do it next week. And the reason why I mention it and we had it in our promotion is that I have said that our public schools across the country, as we all know, are under siege being warred upon, and the weapons that are being used against us to justify the destruction of public education and the teaching profession, well known to all of us. And I mentioned back in November that there have been several attempts to sort of like present public education in a different vein, in an effort to stave off the destruction of public education. I talked about community schools, freedom schools, and other attempts to I hate the word reform because it's been so misused by the current establishment as what they're trying to do, quote, reform, when in fact it's to destroy. So I've looked at this issue of what has been done to try and save public education and what can possibly be done to save public education, raising the question of whether or not we're too late. You've heard me say over the last 3 years that we came late to recognizing that this is a war on public education. And like all wars, you wage your war to win. And in this case, winning meant the destruction of public education and the erection of a privatized system. There's been efforts to mount resistance that, in my view, has not been very successful. There have been attempts to reform public education as a way to stave off the onslaught aimed at destroying public education. I've looked at other people, educators, both who want to save public education, those who want to destroy public education. I've looked at their models. And last spring, end of May, beginning of June, I started working on my model. Who am I to create a model to help save public education? I don't come out of, and you know me, you know that I don't come out of a pre-K to 12 teaching background out of the university. I did study education in the School of Education, but the sociology of education. But I've been working for now 8 months on developing this model, and that's what I've been sharing with you periodically, pieces of it. And it's come down to me saying that public education's purpose should be to contribute to the positive youth development of all of our kids, pre-K to at least the bachelor's degree, if not beyond. And I'm laying out what that model should be. I will try and get to it in more detail next week, which means I'll have to do less as relates to Black History Month. I'm struggling with how I'm going to balance that, but I will have more to say about it. I didn't do it this show because, again, I'm trying to do too much with the little time that we have. I apologize for that if you came waiting to hear more about what I'm calling the new urban research public education school. With that, folks, my time is up. I'm sorry that I didn't get to that second part of this program as I promised, but as I said, I'll try my best to do it next week. Have a good rest of Sunday, and see you next week.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.